You are listening to the CBA Podcast, where we talk everything basketball, from club to AAU to high school to college. The CBA Podcast is brought to you by Chapman Basketball Academy. Your hosts are Terry Massey, Max Johansson, and Joe Chapman.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Last night, it's funny, I was at the Cedarburg banquet, and Sarah Holmes' dad, "You guys didn't do a podcast this week." I'm like, hey, people notice. We must be doing something right that they noticed, right?
Right, right. And we noticed it too. You know, like, yeah, we got to get back on. We needed that little break because it's so many state tournaments and regionals and sectionals and seniors' last games. And, you know, some of those are hard to watch and be at. And, you know, it's just like it's a AAU starting for certain teams already. So it's a combination of a lot. And our last podcast was really good with Craig Robinson. So it was very informative. And now it's like, let's get back into it, you know.
Any with the girls ending up, we kind of all predicted who would win state, and they kind of did. So, yeah. Or any upsets that you guys thought on the girls' side? That
no, not really. I think the girls' game is so evolved now. Their skill set, their level of play is so much higher each year. Their competitiveness, it's not frowned upon anymore how hard they play. And the coaching is so much better too. I mean, they run so much good actions and sets and motion and principles. And so it's just fun to watch the girls' game. And, you know, we had a couple girls get to state, kind of Moraine Lutheran. They were up 18 to 20 points in the second half. Couldn't squeeze it out, but they played an incredible season. You know, they got really far, so we're proud of those girls. Obviously, Pewaukee, they got over the hurdle of beating Notre Dame, and that's a rival. You know, they lost to them, I think, 2 years in a row. Notre Dame won 2 years against them. Pewaukee came back. They got over the hurdle. So I'm happy for those twins and some of those girls. You just see them all the time, and for them to, you know, get over that hurdle. You love to see teams finally get over that hump. And there's another, I knew her, but I didn't know her as well. Nick's sister, Janowski. There's a Janowski girl who's a sophomore who she was controlling that whole game, that finals game. And she played well, sophomore, Pewaukee.
She shoots a lot of threes, doesn't she?
Yeah, yeah. She plays just like Nick. I mean, she's strong. She plays at her own pace. She knows where her spots are. You can't knock her off her spot. So you're looking at them like, wow, you know, that is just genes right there. Like the whole family is good basketball players. So it's just fun to watch, you know, the growth of the game of basketball on the girls' side, but also just the growth individually of some of these players.
I know we want to get in a lot of girls' basketball, but do you guys see anybody knocking Nicolay off on the boys' side?
Yeah.
Wisconsin Lutheran.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was a bad draw. I don't think Nicolay should have been 2 seed. I think they should have been, you know, I think Nicolay got the 4 seed.
They got the 4.
So I think they should have got like the 2 or 3 seed, you know. So it was kind of funny to see that.
Do we know how they pick the seeds?
I don't know how they do that.
Wisconsin Lutheran makes sense. They should be the number one seed in the whole state. I mean, they beat everyone.
Regardless of division.
Right.
But it's just hard. Now Nicolay plays Wisco, first game. Yeah, you know, that should be the final game.
Yeah. And then it's Pewaukee and
Salem? Or something?
West Salem.
Yeah.
So Nicolay's starting to run some crazy trap defense that I watched against Cedarburg at work.
Yeah.
Worked pretty good and stuff. And
yeah, they're a team that can do that.
It's going to come down to, you know, Con Knipple. I mean, he's just a
he's the best,
juggernaut.
Best player. I mean, Davion Hand is really good too, but
yep.
Con is, he'll control that full game, if I had to guess.
Yeah. He's the one player we were talking about. We're going to get him on pretty soon here too. But he's one of those players that translates generations. So you know how we talk about we'll get some of these guys who are 20, 30 playing overseas and we'll kick their butts. He'll be one of those guys that'll be a tough matchup for us because he plays the game slow. He thinks the game. He's not sped up. You know, he can play with older guys and he can play with younger guys. So he's going to be fun to watch the next 5 years.
I saw Tim just got an award, player of the – what was it?
Player of the year.
Yep.
Second time in his career.
Yeah, 2 times. That's pretty hard to do.
What I thought was cool is yesterday we were in the gym and there he is at the gun.
Yeah.
Season's over. And just jacking up shots.
Yeah, I mean, he haven't taken a day off, really. I mean, they lost, and he was back in the gym the next day shooting, and he's working on the NBA line now and just stretching his game out and working on what St. Thomas needs from him. So those type of kids, we talked about, you know, the one percenters. He finished, what, top six in Mr. Basketball.
Mr. Basketball finalist.
So he's a Mr. Basketball finalist that'll get announced sometime this weekend. So, you know, seeing those guys go, and now we got Mike and Tim being one of our third grade coaches. they got to make practice planners. And Max, you got a cool story about one of the kids that realized who was coaching them.
Tim and Mike were just at the tryout helping us out. They were doing like the evals and different things, helping out with the drills. And then afterwards, like a dad came in like, "Do you guys know who these people are?" Because I think they were from Sheboygan, and they would go to just random games and watch. That's the guy you guys watch every Friday night. And then I turned around, I was like, "They're going to be your coach." And the kid's look on his face was like, you know, eyes wide open, super happy. He's like, "Oh, wow, that's awesome."
Yeah.
So it was really cool, like full circle moment there.
So I know this podcast, we want to get into the girls' game and the evolution of it and stuff. But we can start with, I want to give your shout out to your club team winning the YBL and going undefeated.
Yeah.
I know there's a little stuff there that. Talk about a little bit.
Oh yeah, I mean it was a great experience. We you know, in league play we went 20-0. In WYBL we played different tournaments, so overall we went 34-0. We played in the AAU tournament beginning of the year, went 2-2. You know, we played up against AAU team, so that was pretty cool. But yeah, just overall, just seeing the evolvement of the youth sports game is just so fun and so like intellect is like these kids are fourth graders, where when I played, I didn't play like this in fourth grade. So where these kids are in fourth grade overall as a state, it's just impressive to see, because, you know, most of us, the seventh or eighth grade is when you take off. Like some of these kids are like way above their time already. And we've been blessed to have a group of coaches and a group of players that have brought in to how hard it is to actually be a good team, not just good players. So that's pretty cool. So our fourth grade team won WYBL, so which was pretty cool. And just to see the looks on the kids' face, like, "Woof, we did it." Because sometimes it's hard to be undefeated, and like it's pressure on you every game to live up to the standard. And every team's going to come and scout you, and they want to, you know, beat you. The crowd wants to beat you. The parents want to beat you. The other coaches want to beat you. So, the life lessons that we're teaching our kids at 10 is something that we probably learned at 15, 16. So they're learning a little bit earlier how to deal with adversity. I remember the first time, you know, in high school hearing racist remarks as I'm taking a ball out in a sectional finals, and you've got an all white crowd behind you, and, you know, they saying things to try to rattle you. But, you know, at 15, 16, that's still something you don't want to hear. But it's something that you know what they're trying to do. They're just trying to rattle you. Doesn't make it right or wrong. But you know, at 10, that's just harder to decipher because their mind doesn't understand why people don't like them. So if they hear racist remarks, like sometimes my boys hear, or they hear things from, you know, the black community that they're not black enough, or the white community that, you know, they're doing, you know, they playing like monkeys out there. So it's just different things that they have to learn how to deal with early at being 10 years old, as opposed to intellectually learning how to process what they're trying to do at 16, 17. So it's, as a parent, you want to have that so you can teach them this is going to happen, you know, and you can't control what other people say, what people think. You have to just go out there and perform and play, and be respectful to the game, be respectful to yourselves, your teammates, and that's all you can do. But I got to do it at 10.
Yeah, and
it's not right. Obviously, we all know that. And, you know, we had, you know, instances where they want, they think they're 12 or 13 playing down for fourth grade. They asked for birth certificates, you know, before we played. That happened before. So the kids, you know, they don't know. They just out there, you know, trying to have fun. You know, the game is still fun to them. So that's the experience of being really good at an early age. That's a part of the game that you want to teach your kids how to deal with adversity. And hopefully that helps them grow. And it helps the overall environment of whatever team that they're on.
Oh, I'll be honest. It'll be it kind of pisses me off a little bit, right? Because my son is one of your kid's best friends, and the way you treat my kid and stuff, and it's just it makes me angry. So just saying.
Yeah, I mean, like, we talk about it all the time. We got a culture here that if you put the time into it and you're around good coaching year round, you're going to take leaps and bounds. It's just a part of the game. Like Coach Max works with the boys. Everyone, it's a village. Everyone works with our kids. So just to see their success is a huge step to their development, because they can see that it works.
And they're super proud of it. You knew what team.
Yeah.
You knew their team when they came in on Monday. They all had their WWE hat on. A couple had a hat on. Yeah. I know what team you were on. I saw a picture.
Yeah.
They're all super proud of it. I'm sure they all wore it to school on Monday. They probably haven't taken it off yet.
Right.
But that's a reflection of the work that they're doing outside, right? Because when I coach, so I coach seventh grade girls this year, and not one of them played AAU, right?
Right.
So every team that we played had three or four girls that play AAU. And we would lose to those teams,
right?
Because they have two players that are doing Euro steps, and you know, and no one else can do that stuff, right?
Correct.
So it's the extra work that these kids are doing outside that parents probably don't even have no clue about.
Oh, 100%. And I think that's the hardest part is we put in so much work. We talked about it in one of the first episodes of multi-sport players. Mm-hmm. And I was diving into that you can be multi-sport in the same sport, because you can have fun with your guys. It's not even worth nothing. You can go to these camps, have fun, 8 to 3. You're not thinking about, I need to get better. You're thinking about, man, I'm just having fun. I got the ball in my hand. I'm with my guys. You know, we were laughing, joking around. That's multi-sport, because there's no pressure. It's no,
right.
But now you're still getting better. So these kids that are going from camp to camp and doing different things and hanging out with their buddies, they're watching games, they're going to games, they're on 2K, you know, they're all learning. You know, they got the cards, you know, the match cards, you know, people don't realize that's all getting their IQ. And, you know, the boys know players from the 70s, the 80s.
Right.
And it's just a part of the game that it helps escalate kids.
Early. What I noticed with you, Joe, too, though, like last year, if I'd watch Joseph and Steph on the gun, you just kind of look over there once in a while. You didn't say nothing, you know, or, you know, when they're doing a drill, you just kind of watch them do what they think. But this year, you start talking a little more. Joseph, get that foot in or whatever. And now that's the leap they made.
Correct.
You know.
But we talked about, me and Max and you, we talk about it's steps to this. It's the love of the game first. It's learning how to make mistakes early. Is you got to be coachable. But if you don't love it first, and you got to learn how to make mistakes, and you're not around a village of people who are embracing you as a player, then you got too much pressure on you too early. You know, so all the little stuff that they've gotten better at, they first had to love the game, you know, and us as parents, we're not living through our kids, especially the ones who have played on a high level. It's more so we want to give them what the game gave us. And first was the joy of it and what we got up from. Then it's the discipline and structure of it. Then you eventually get better because of all three of those things are in order. You love it, you're disciplined about it, and you got structure about it. And you got a village of people who embrace that for you. Everything else is organically going to happen. So every year you can keep adding on to what they need to do better. What's your footwork? What are you eating at night? What time you're going to sleep? Like, you can start to do that as they love it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think specifically those boys are always in here, and I'm probably out of their coach, I feel like I hold them to a little bit higher standard, probably a little unfairly.
I did that. I did that in the drills.
Yeah.
I'm like, Joseph, be an example out of your buddy, you know,
and that's dribbling probably, and stuff, definitely unfair towards them. But I think that's like, they live.
Yeah.
I don't think people really like, there's a group of probably like 10 to 15 kids. Like, it's a pretty decent amount that are in here from 3 to 5:30.
Yep.
Every day, though, at some point they're coming in here shooting, they're either lifting, they're just like, hey, is there a hoop open? Hey, can I hop in this workout? Can I do this?
Yep. But honestly, Max, that's why they have been successful. It's you guys being holding them to a different standard. They just got coached by Antonio Curro. That's not easy to do for anybody. Third grade, 17, you got to have the right mindset, the right mental to be coached by a coach like that. And they got pushed every day, and he wasn't sparing them at all. He treated them like that they were his son. So he got on them just as much. And you know what? That's what we want as a parent. Like you want sometimes somebody else, like, oof, you go do it. So I don't have to do it, because if I have to do it and then be the coach and then be the dad, then it gets harder. So
too much.
It's too much. So if someone can be just as hard as they know how I am on my own kids, and it don't have to come from my voice, that's perfect for me, because I know eventually I got to be that guy too. But it takes a village for all those kids to get where they're going.
So this podcast, we wanted to kind of dive into the girls game a little bit. We've always had boys on. We did have a couple girls on and stuff, but we didn't really dive into the girls game and the evolution of it and how popular a couple college players, Caitlin Clark, Angela Reese, Haley Van Lith, and have made the game. And so we can dive into
it. Oh, it's a beautiful game. I caught myself the other day. I think Marquette was playing Xavier. Yes, and Iowa was playing Michigan girls. So, you know, I'm looking, like, I got YouTube TV. Shout out to them. I'm sorry, Spectrum. but so I got it back to back, like, which game should I watch? And I end up watching all of the girls game, and I just recorded the Marquette game because it was way more intense. Like, the crowd was there. It was the environment.
I think the ratings are higher right now in the girls game than the boys game.
100% it is. It's just a beautiful game to watch the evolution. The girls, they kind of took off when Steph Curry took off. What I mean is he evolved that game so much to where the girls are finally comfortable doing a lot of things that he's comfortable doing, shooting from deep, one dribble pull up going right, one dribble pull up going left from three, one leg from the logo from three. Like, you don't see some of this stuff. And the evolution of him and some of those girls who kind of took his lead with it, like Sabrina, you know, played for the New York Liberty now. And it's so crazy. We're going to dive in a lot of stuff, but I see some of these guys wearing girl shoes. We never had that happen ever growing up. You know, that's like a taboo. Like, oh, you got the Cheryl Swoops on? Like, what's wrong with you? Like, Pastor Jordan's up. But now I see guys in, you know, the Sabrina shoes are, man, just amazing. I see girls in the Stewies. I see, you know, different shoes out there. And it's like, and I see the guys wearing them. And it's like, okay, this is something culturally that is starting to take off that we didn't have growing up. But, you know, some of our girls that are starting to take advantages of it. Obviously, Hannah at Iowa State, they just lost in the finals last night. I was watching that game. You know, but they're going to be in a tournament. They won enough big games to get in the tournament. So they should probably be a 7.
Her dad just texted me today. I need to board my dog.
But, yeah, this is the evolution of the game. I don't know where you guys want to start with that, but – you know, obviously, you know, we started 7 years ago with our girls program and guys program. And just to see the evolution of the skill work that we were working with the girls on, from the Euro steps to the pro hops to the, you know, shooting longer threes, that all started when we, you know, those girls were 6 or 7 grades. So now just to see that it's evolving to where college is now, where the pros is, because I wasn't teaching the game as a guys and girls. I was just teaching the game,
right,
you know, for where it should be. So to see some of that stuff starting to translate, I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think you can just kind of start with, like, UConn won. It was pretty dominant by UConn for, like, that whole stretch of late 2000s to, like, mid 2010s. And now you see there's like there's probably 7 to 9 contenders each year in the women's game. So, like, I think that shows, like, the training, the talent, the skill level, like, develop and get more spread out to where it's not, there's 50 girls that are unbelievable in the college game now, more than that. But at one point it was like, we're all going to UConn and UConn's winning the national title by 10. Yep, and I think that's a good example of how you can see it grow from the mid 2010s to where it is now. Like, Iowa women's basketball was not, like,
right,
they weren't good. Like, Maryland, you got South Carolina, you got LSU, you got UConn, you got UNC. You still have the traditional powers, but there's probably 8 to 10 teams that now can actually feel like they win a national title. You got UCLA, Stanford's always been good.
Yep.
Rather than it's just UConn and everyone else.
Yeah. And also, it was like in the 1990s, it was Tennessee.
Yep.
You know, everyone went to Tennessee to play for Pat Summitt. Pat Summitt was an unbelievable coach. So it's just like all the good girls went one place. You know, now they're just everywhere, you know, and that's pretty cool to kind of see the evolution of that.
I think as a guy who's coached girls for over 10 years now, you can teach boys moves and stuff, and they just rely on their athletic ability to do stuff. I got to teach my girls why they can do this move and when they can do this move compared to them relying on their athletic ability. And I think you're seeing smarter girls with higher IQ
because
they're learning why they have to do it, not just I can do it because I can do it.
Like Caitlin Clark can shoot from wherever, but she also like is a really good passer. She gets downhill. Mm-hmm. She has a really good floor game too. Like she can do everything.
She reads the game really well. She understands the different coverages that they're going to have on her. If whether it's a blitz, whether it's man to man, where they front face Gardner, she kind of sees the game and flows the game. You know, and she's still efficient, you know, by being face guarded and double teamed. And she's still a very efficient player, you know, where she gets 10 rebounds, 8-9 assists. You know, she just, you know, well-rounded that way. So, yeah, I think the evolution of the game, I think, is kind of taken off. Like players like, you know, Carolyn, you know, my wife played, you know, basketball. She would dominate in this era more than the era that she played in because she was a stretch four who can shoot the ball at 6 foot. Similar to our Rachel Ag, that's the same type of player she was. She played, you know, overseas for a year in England. And it's just the evolvement of the game. It's just, you know, it would have been more suited to how she played now. Because you got to shoot the ball, you got to stretch the floor, you got to have, you know, different players that can do different things, high IQ players. We teach girls how to set the screen and what to do off of it. You remember back in the day, the girls were so robots, and you still see it on certain levels. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you go A, B to C, they're going to do exactly what you said, and they're going to be like, well, you told me to do that. Now you're getting 3-4 girls on each team that they know where A, B, C is, but they're not just going there. They know how to make counter moves and different things. So, you know, the involvement of the game is just so special to watch. I think it's ahead of the boys' game, to be honest with you.
You still see very, even in high school, specifically high school, Illinois high school scores like Wisconsin high schools. It's in the 40s. Like for the Homestead DePeer game, it went to 2 overtimes. It was 52-50. And you go up and watch Germantown play, or like Germantown Brookfield East game. They're running up and down. They're shooting threes. Danica's shooting from the logo. It's like it's a completely different pace and feel. And I don't know if that's like coaching and getting just to like, hey, this is how we're playing. We're playing with a different style, and like the boys' game just being inside out. Like there should never be a minute and 30 possession in high school. And it just does. It seems
it happens
like
a lot.
It does happen a lot, and not existent in the girls' game. It just seems to happen less in the girls' game, where they're playing more free, and we're not taking. You got to pass it 5 times to get a shot off.
Well, some of that is okay. So when my daughters played AAU, it would be you go to practice twice a week, and you maybe once in the season you do some speed and agility, but you just practice twice a week and then you play your tournaments. Mm-hmm. Well, I think the training parts, like what you guys do, is what has evolved. Because when you started, you know, how many years ago or whatever, that's when you started seeing training being more prevalent. And that's, I think, what's really made the game evolve the way it has, is like when you guys started training. And you know,
definitely adds a different, like the, we've said skill level a bunch of times, but just the ability to, I guess it is skill. It's to put the ball on the floor, shoot, pass. And we're like Joe said, we're doing the same thing here at Chapman as we would do. Like I had Mason the other day. Mason went through the same workout as I'd probably put a 17-year-old kid through.
Yep. Well, girls and guys will. I mean, you have boys and girls kind of doing the same workout together.
Mm-hmm.
Except when you tell Molly go shoot with Tim, and she goes,
she didn't want to do that. There was one hoop available. Shoot over there. That's
funny. And they get that sometimes. Like we got dual workouts where, you know, high school workouts, there's guys and girls. Mm-hmm. More times than not, they don't want to, you know, be at the same drills as each other. But you get some of those special players that don't care. Like, all right, like KK Honor.
Yeah, or
like,
even whatever. At the like, fifth grade level, Lola.
Yeah, she don't
only
care.
Wants to play boys.
Right. You get some of these special girls, they don't really care who. who they with. It's about getting better, and they want to be pushed by guys. I mean, we couldn't put her with any girl at her age or 2 age up. She had to play with boys when she came to training. So you got those instances as well. But yeah, the involvement of the girls game, I still think this state needs a shot clock. I think
Illinois just passed. 2026. So it's Illinois.
2026.
Yeah. So it's Illinois. Everybody around us, Iowa, Minnesota.
Yeah. Like, what are we doing? I'm watching these state games and, you know, I'm watching teams stall the ball and it's just like, what are we doing?
I saw Twitter. One guy, they held it for the first quarter.
Yeah, I saw it. It was 0-0 the first quarter. Yeah.
They just stood there and held the ball. It's like,
That's partly on the other coach.
Yeah,
that's
we're trapping, foul.
Just run to the other end so you can get the ball. Right. Like, okay, let them
score. Right, let them score.
Let them score. We play.
Oh, and it's just hard to do that. And it's so I'm happy that AAU is starting to bring a shot clock, you know, involved. So these kids got to learn how to play basketball. Stalling the ball and playing without a shot clock is not basketball.
You're teaching them to be robotic, kind of like we talked, and like they're not even catching and looking at the rim. So
no.
You're just taking a decision out of their head.
Yep.
Usually like taking their confidence away. Like you can't shoot it. We got to get here. But you probably pass up on 3-4 shots every possession when you play that way.
Yeah. And no one finds any rhythm.
And no one develops that way.
No.
You just pass up shots. That's what I always tell. If you're open and you space, you shoot it. Like you play off your shot first. You shoot. It's even third or fourth graders. If you're open, shoot it. I don't care if you hit the rim or backboard, but you got to be able to, if you feel like you can get a shot off, you got to shoot it.
Right.
And that's the thing with girls, coaching girls. It's like they're so afraid. They get so timid out there. I asked the girls, my team this year, I'm like, so what stops you from shooting? They're like, well, we're afraid. What are you afraid of? I said, okay, you play softball, right? Yeah. Are you afraid to pitch the ball hard? Well, no. Do you play volleyball? Yeah. Are you afraid to bump that spike? Well, no. I said, well, then shoot the ball.
The most fun part.
Yeah. But a lot of people are afraid of failure. They're afraid of other people's perception of them. They're just afraid of letting people down, especially girls. So they got this fear of them. And I had my first 15U girls practice yesterday. And I'm just looking at all these girls because when people come back from their high school season, they're either really high or they're really low. There's no kind of in between. So you're trying to help them out to become better because we're their coaches, we're their psychologists, we're their sports psychologists, you know, we're their guidance counselors. We're kind of everything, you know, when they walk back into the doors and you got to kind of get a feel of where everybody is. So, you know, I had girls turning down shots. They getting a rebound. They looking for the outlet to the guard. It's just like, no, we're going to evolve your game. You know, 1 through 5, whoever gets the rebound, let's go. You know, let's get it on a run. You know, if you got a wide open shot, you know, take it. If there's a one more pass and you score 25 points a game for your high school, that's probably not going to happen in AAU. So you need to turn down some good shots for some great shots. So you're trying to pump in all of this stuff to make people feel good about themselves. But the perception of who they are as players, it kind of rubs off on girls more than guys. But, you know, they don't want to have a fear of letting people down.
I like coaching girls because they laugh more. They have more fun on the bench. I think they're better teammates. You know.
Yeah, they are. They better teammates. They laugh more. They give you a better spirit too. You know, when you're walking in, sometimes we come from the guys' practice.
It's a really good change of pace.
Yeah, it's a really good change of pace for us because we go to the guys' practice and you gotta, you know, they're goofing around too much. You gotta really drill those guys and get them going hard as they can and accepting hard coaching. Then you go into the girls, we got to do the same thing, but it's different, you know, because they got a smile on their face. They want to be there. They're energetic. They just bring a different smile to you. And they bring so much positivity with them.
What do you think is the biggest thing why college girls basketball is so popular? We can say Caitlin Clark because she's Jack, you know, Jack. Is it just because she can hit a three from the logo or?
I think it's more, I would say, obviously you need a lightning rod like Caitlin Clark to get the focus on it and get it going. But with the continuity of the women's game and the roster, like there's not as much roster movement and player movement. Like, if you're an Iowa Hawkeyes fan for the women's basketball, like you've been with those girls for 3 years and you saw them make a Final Four run. So you've been through the ups and downs. LSU, they return. Iowa returns 11 players from their national title run last year. LSU returned six. For the boys' national title, each team returned six, but only three in the rotation for UConn and two in the rotation for South Dakota State. It's six in the rotation for Iowa and four in the rotation for LSU. So, like, I think the continuity and the familiarity, like, that's what you always loved about college sports, is that you get these guys or girls for 4 years and you're on this, like, roller coaster with them. Now, specifically on the boys, you don't know where anyone is.
Right.
It's rare. You like,
look at the portal already.
I played for St. John's 1 year or Rutgers, and now I'm on UConn the next for that Cam Spencer guy, different things like that. So I think it's just the continuity. You know who's playing and who's on your team, and you've been through like kind of battles with them as a fan.
I think there's a lot of missed opportunities starting at the high school level for the girls basketball, right? The girls are playing here and the boys are at the school at the opposite. But when there's a doubleheader, that gym is packed. So why can't they run JV games Thursday night and have every Friday or varsity game a doubleheader, right? Concessions would be more.
Yeah.
Attendance would be more.
Yeah.
Everybody's there. And you could even put the boys' game first and the girls' game second once in a while and switch it up a little bit. And that way each team is, you know, cheering on the other, you know. And
I think we're behind on that in this state, too. I think, you know, they shouldn't be playing on the same day because you're splitting the community. You know, the girls should play on one day, the guys should play on one day, or you got double headers, you know, so the community.
The double header is such a great environment.
Yeah, it is. It is. I saw it at Hartford where they switched it because they were trying to get a share of the North Shore. So the guys played at 5:30 and the girls played at 7 and they packed Hartford out, you know, to get the girls over that hump.
And it's more money for the concessions and everything.
Everybody that way. And I think that's a model that they got to start doing more of in this state. Is having the guys and girls on the same day or switch the days up so we can have more community support.
And they can't say gym space because there isn't a gym that we go to that doesn't have an auxiliary gym and another gym. You know what I mean? Right. So you could run JV in one gym for two.
Absolutely.
You know, and then.
Yeah.
So when we were in high school in Apple, when we played like in Appleton West or East, it was a crosstown rival. We'd have all six teams. Boys and girls play that same night. So we tip off, freshmen would both go at 4, and then varsity would rotate. So let's say boys varsity is at 5:45, while girls JV is going on in the other gym, and then guys JV would play at 7:30 in the aux gym, and girls varsity would play 7:45 on the main. So we do that at every Appleton doubleheader there, which was a really cool environment. So you have both programs, every single team playing on that same night.
Yeah.
And then you see all over Twitter, okay, oh, nobody cares about the girls' game. Well, that's not true. I mean,
right.
The ratings on college girls' basketball right now is higher than college boys' basketball.
Yep.
I think it's all marketing, and in my opinion.
Yeah. And these girls, it's so many more girls playing the game than it was 10 years ago because they got people they can look up to. It's not like someone slam dunking a ball here and there. You get a few amazing athletes that you're starting to see more and more on the girl side, but they can reach for the stars and see girls that are shooting and playing skillful and being lightning rods for their university. Like that's reachable, you know, to a lot of people. So on the guy side is, you know, you're going to be blessed with the athletic ability. Sometimes you won't be, you know, Craig Robinson was kind of talking about you might have the genes, you might not, you know, it's different on a guy's game than it is the girls. But the sport itself is just so much more likable, you know, on a girl's game. And I also like that it's not frowned upon these girls, like South Carolina game against LSU, you know, it was a scuffle, you know. Back in the day, when you see two girls scuffling, you don't really like it. They're like, oh, just go play nice, you know, in the sand. We don't want you guys to be this type of players. But emotions run high in games. And it's okay for these girls to have those type of environments just as much as it is okay for the guys to have it. So we have this reality of what we want from, you know, the girls game as opposed to what it really is. It should be physical. It should be trash talking. It's going to happen. So why try to cover it up, you know? And it's a part of the game that we all know it is.
I think part of the thing out there why they think girls gaming is important is because the WNBA is not very popular, in my opinion. And I think it's because, first of all, they run it during summer.
That's the first one.
Who wants to be sitting at home watching a basketball game when it's nice outside? You know, why not run it during the NBA season?
Right, right.
When it's basketball season. Yep. College girls basketball is during basketball season, and look how popular it is right now.
Right. Yeah,
that would be interesting to see because, I mean, Caitlin Clark's declaring. Mm-hmm. I think the Cameron Rink, the Stanford big, is also declaring. So you'll have all these popular college athletes going to the WNBA. So it'll be very interesting how they market that or, like, have changed the popularity of that league. Like, maybe it is just Caitlin Clark. Maybe they're doing something else, like.
Well, it's so hard, the girls' game, because they make so much money overseas than they do the WNBA. And it's also, it's not enough spots in the WNBA. So all our good players that come out of college, they don't have a spot in the WNBA. They might get drafted, but, you know, all the vets play a long time in the WNBA as opposed to NBA. And it's a younger league.
The WNBA is almost like the off-season for those girls because they make less money.
Yep.
It's in the summer. They're coming back home.
Yep.
And then in the winter, they'll go play overseas and make millions of money for Real Madrid.
Yep.
Not millions, but more money than they make here.
Yeah.
I just think that, you know, let's pretend that they ran it during the NBA season, right? So the All-Star game, you have a WNBA All-Star game, you have an NBA All-Star game, but then you do a co-ed All-Star game.
Yeah.
You know, look at what happened with Steph Curry shooting in the shooting competition.
That was the most watched.
She just about beat him.
Yep.
You know, and it was one of the most watched three-point contests.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying combine the All-Star games, but you could have a co-ed, and you could have co-ed competitions.
Yep.
And
it'd almost be cool to do almost like different weekends of where the WNBA goes to and plays their games in that specific city for a weekend. So it's almost like groupings where one weekend we're in Indianapolis and these eight teams are there to play their league games.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go to Vegas and then they go to Orlando and so it's almost like a traveling thing where they get more. It's a whole event from Thursday to Sunday and you play two games a weekend maybe and you have open practice and you do cool stuff like that. Just like something different to drum up rather than I don't know. You don't, they're on ESPN and ABC sometimes, but you don't know when.
It's in the summer and they're getting overshadowed because you got TBT in the summer. You got other sporting events in the summer.
You got the NBA playoffs.
You got the playoffs. Baseball.
No, well, their season.
Baseball. But.
Their playoffs start when the NFL starts.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's opening season. You know, first game NFL's first week in September. That's when the WNBA playoffs
are. I do let's do a WNBA Today. You have the WNBA All-Stars on the NBA Today show.
Yep.
Let's have them talk about the women's game I mean, they fill that airways with a bunch of garbage anyways. They talk about the same stuff. Let's put a WNBA show at 2:30 in the afternoon rather than the Stephen A. Smith again.
Right. The replay.
And they did College Game Day for the women's when Caitlin Clark was going to break the record.
Yep.
That was the only time they've done that.
Yep.
So there's good enough games right now where I think you can, whether it's for a year, do a College Game Day for the women's at UConn versus Maryland or South Carolina at LSU, Tennessee, Kentucky.
Because look at the great coaches you have there, too. You got Dawn Staley, she's an amazing leader. Just she can coach anybody. It don't have to be women's sports. She's just an amazing leader. Becky Hammond. I mean, she's one of my favorite coaches. I mean, she could be the San Antonio Spurs coach. She should have been that coach. You know, Pop ain't going nowhere. But
Kim McCulkey's been doing it for a long time.
Forever. It's like, it's just so many quality coaches. You know, that's why.
A little slack, though, for with the fight, you know, Dawn took the high road in the fight, and then she said, "Well, push Angel Reese, don't push my guard," or something like that.
And that's why I feel like that's authentic. And she's always in the mix, so she's always mixing.
That's how
she was
as a player.
She's always saying stuff.
Yep.
Which, how many times do you, the guys, it's just so, it's so much more business and professional. Like, you kind of lose some of the.
Yep.
Authenticity of it, I think.
How long before we see a Steph Curry, Caitlin Clark Subway commercial?
you know that's coming. She's already in a State Farm commercial with Jimmy Butler.
He was there. Yeah, I mean, she had who was the rapper that was at the Iowa game versus Ohio State? It wasn't Travis Scott. It was someone that was in the commercial.
Yep,
him and his whole group were there at Iowa City for the girls game. It's like, that's awesome.
I got a question for you guys and an idea. So I have a hard time with state for the youth, sending my girls to state, because that's always during spring break, you know. And is there something better that Wisconsin can do for youth for the state tournaments and stuff?
Well, it's too long. The seasons are too long. The season starts really October to, you know, this week. That's longer than high school season, you know, so that they can't go too far. You know, they got to do something like a March Madness in the beginning of the year.
I think that would be cool. Kind of do it all with the high school stuff going on and make it like a whole March Madness theme for all of basketball.
For all of basketball from third grade to eighth grade. It should be a March Madness type of feel. Where you got the venues to do it at, you know, the venues
convention
don't matter.
Centers in Milwaukee, like that USJN.
Yep.
If you can pack 30 courts into the McCormick Center for Nike Challenge and stuff, you can do it at the Midwest, you know.
Yeah, easily. And that's the thing that needs to change. It's too long. And then it goes into spring break and it goes into AAU, you know. So when I had my girls team, we stopped, you know, the end of February. We're done. You know, we went to the state. There's a state at in the Dells.
Girls was the Dells and then the Wausau. We did Wausau a lot.
Right. So we did that and then we were done. It's like, it's too long of a season. You're expecting too much for these girls because it's over like two semesters, you know. So it's a lot of schoolwork that they're doing. It's, you know, it's just a long, long time. So I think they first got to shorten it up. And then secondly, they got to make some type of theme that everyone's involved in.
How cool would it be a March Madness theme, like down in Milwaukee with the Midwest Express Center and the Deer District and stuff? And can you imagine the atmosphere, whole state thing? And then with the state tournaments with the high school going on at the same time? And
I think that's how it should be. You got your records, you got your different divisions that you're in. Here's the top 25, 30 teams and League One, League Two, different tiers. Of each one, everyone gets their fair shake, you know.
Because it's not actually they call it a state tournament, but it's really not actually. No. It's like the WYBL, really,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's whoever's in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's whoever signs up.
Correct.
What are your thoughts? You guys were talking about seeding and how do they figure it out and stuff. I saw a tweet from, I think Coach Cryer was retweeting a thing about a tournament type playoff instead of the seeding. It's like a March Madness.
Yep.
Tournament. What do you guys think about that?
I think that's a good idea. I really do think that if they go to a tournament setting like that, but it still goes by what seed everyone is. I mean, it's still going to be seeded in that too.
Yeah, it would just almost be you'd start at 32, right?
Right.
Because you still have to do divisions. Like, it's not like Division 5 play with Division 1 where you do the whole state.
Correct.
That would just wouldn't.
It wouldn't be.
Wouldn't be fair, but it wouldn't be fun or like the point of it. Like, compete against that. The level you've been competing with all year.
In terms
of, because I think high school is a little different with college. There would be a lot less upsets in high school than there are at the Division I level of March Madness.
Right.
Playing feels a lot more even. But I think if you did it 1 through 32, and the thing that drives me nuts with the seeding is, why am I playing a North Shore team in the second round of the playoffs when I just played them twice?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you can't see another... Brookfield, I said this before, Brookfield Central played Brookfield East in the first round of the playoffs. I don't care what the seeding says. That can't happen.
Right, it can't happen.
You can't do that. It's not fun for the kids. It's not it's not fair. It's like, play someone else, get a different environment. Yeah. So the whole point of being in the playoffs is you play different teams from different areas.
Yep. And I also feel like when you get out of your regionals and they kind of reseed from there, right?
Yeah.
And then they put the team that is like close to their like North Shore, that now they play in another North Shore school for that venue.
Yeah.
But somebody got to travel an hour and a half to get to that site. But it's a sectional game. So you're like, how did y'all come up with us having to come an hour and a half and that team had to come 5 minutes for a sectional game? You know, how is that fair for anybody? You know, it's just like, how do they come up with some of these, you know, formats and who plays who and the reseeding? I always find that curious. Like, all right, is that the computer reseeding them too, or is that the
reseeding
people?
Doesn't really make sense either. You have brackets.
You got the bracket already.
So you're just playing sectional. Sectional one plays sectional. 3 and sectional 2, play sectional 4. And then, yeah. There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
You got to beat everyone anyways.
Right.
Do you think maybe on the college side, the girls' game is so much better right now because I feel girls stick with the school for all 4 years. There's no one and dones. There's no. I mean, the NIL is in girls, but I don't think it's as prevalent as in boys, is it? Or
and, no. And part of that is the money aspect. And it's the 1% of the college athletes that are really like one and dones. Like it's not as big of an issue as everyone makes it seem.
Mm-hmm.
But like back to like the continuity of it. You're exactly right. Like the girls' game, you're sticking around, you're getting a degree, you're playing there because it's been your dream to play college basketball, and you love the game.
Yep.
So I think that you can feel that when you watch a girls' game.
Yeah, I take Hannah for instance, Hannah Bellinger. She did 4 years at Truman. By her second year, she was an All-American. She could have left. She had opportunities. People were hitting me up like, "You think she's leaving? let us know." She didn't want to do that. She wanted to leave her legacy. You know, she played her 4 years and then she went for as a grad. You know, that's more what the girls are doing. You know, they have 6 or 7 girls that return. They might get a grad player. They don't get a lot of transfers to girls. They get more grad players that are 20, 21, 22 on their senior year that can come in and learn a culture, already got some type of culture already, and be a key component to their team, as opposed to 3 or 4 transfers coming in and try to rebuild that way.
As someone who's played overseas, for the girls that are done with college and WNBA is not for them, how much harder is it for them overseas than for like the guys?
It's not that much harder. I think it's less jobs. Like we said, that's the hardest part for the girls' game is it's just less jobs everywhere.
Is there a European side of the girls' side? I mean, you hear Euro boys, you know, the NBA is all European coming.
I think I'm not completely informed on this, but like they'll have a top, to Joe's point of less jobs, they'll have a top league for the girls that's very similar, like the top Spain league, the top British league, but there's not as many second and third divisions for the girls. But there's a crap ton of jobs, not high paying jobs, but there's second and third divisions for the boys, which like feed into if you win, you can move up.
Yeah.
So that's I think the main.
Yeah, and there's a lot of jobs where it's the second, third tier for boys is like the girls' first tier. It's just not a lot of opportunities, not a lot of Americans, not a lot of money. So the big spots, you know, your Madrid's, your Spain's, your, you know, Israel's, Australia, they're going to have some of these WNBA players, you know, coming back and forth. And then the girls game is so popular that the European girls are really good too. So, you know, it's not like you need 5 Americans, you know, it's starting to become a European game on a guy side too and a girl side.
What does Europe do that we do differently? Because I see all over social media that we need to start doing what they're doing as far as developing players and stuff. What do they do? Why are they more successful?
It's a full program. You're in that program from the minute you're in school to whether you make the professional team or whatever they have. Like it's you're not bouncing around. Like I live in this area, this program, I'm with this program, I'm with this team.
Could it be that the money doesn't dictate it as much?
Yeah, it's not flowing. It's like what Max is saying. They start at a younger age than us, and they start playing competitive younger age, and they got more skill work. So, you know, a lot of times they go 4 or 5 hours worth of skill work, where here we go 1 or 2, you know.
And we play, and they play 1 game
a week,
every 2 weeks or a week, and we play 8 in 3 days.
Right.
But I think like, and they do like the club, it's like club to the professional too. So like how many, I think we're try to do a good job of keeping our kids here and not grab, but how many kids help hop around to 6 different AAU teams?
Right.
I shouldn't say you don't get better, but it's harder to do that and build skill and character and things like that, where the European, like, this is where I'm at, this is what I'm working with, I'm going to work with the same coaches each day, they're helping me get better, and it's consistent.
You see guys like Luca, who's been a professional since he's been, you know, 16 17, and so when you see him playing for Dallas, this game is easy for him. You know, the Europe game is harder. you know, than an American game. It really is. With the 3 seconds and illegal defenses and no hand checks and, you know, different things you can't do, you know, here. You know, in Europe, you got to really play. You're playing against grown men who's going to take cigarette breaks, you know, at halftime, have one with their coach and come right back in and, you know, ready to play you. Like, it's just a more physical game. Is the crowds are more intense. I mean, it's fireworks in the crowds. Yeah. It's random and it's lively. It's like you're going to a football game, but it's basketball, you know, so it's more intense. So when these players come over and make this transition, it's like easier for them to make that transition than it is for a lot of Americans going overseas to play.
So Caitlin Clark's going WNBA. Angel Reese is senior?
I think she just declared,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, she's going to.
So you lose them, Haley Van Lith.
Yeah, she's going to.
She's going. So, I mean, when you talk girls college, I mean, those three names pop up right away. You know, they're moving on. So how does the college game stay popular next year?
You got Juju Watkins. Is unbelievable. She's on pace to break all of Caitlin's records if she stays all 4 years. I mean, she just broke a lot of records that was set by Cheryl Miller, Reggie Miller's sister, and she was considered.
She's a freshman at USC, right?
Yeah. She's considered the best player of all time, Cheryl Miller, on the girls' side.
Mm-hmm.
So she's breaking all her records already as a freshman. So, you know, she's going to be the face. She still got Paige over at UConn. You know,
right.
When she decided she's coming back, I thought that was pretty cool, you know, to have that. And South Carolina, I mean, they're just, what can you say about them? Look at the freshman. She won the MVP of the SEC championship. I forget her name. But she's just a freshman. You know, she's making these flashy behind the back passes and fake passes like Rondo. It's just like, well, this game is going to just keep evolving because the freshmen that's coming in are starting to play like upperclassmen. That's how you know the game is evolving. So it's star-studded. And if you're a really good senior in high school, and let's say you're a 5-star senior in high school, it's translating over fast to girls' college. So it's easy to get more faces now.
I think the terms of the faces, like they have the big time coaches, Dawn Staley, Gino Auriemma, Kim Mulkey. Yep. They have those big time faces where the guys, those faces are kind of, they're out. Roy Williams, Jay Wright, Coach K, like they're moving on, where it used to always be a coach's game of like the coaches drive it. It's the coaches and the universities that used to pump it. And I think the girls have more heavy hitter coaches, and with their personalities and the social media and them like just being out there, I think it's just growing that game and helping it get even farther.
I think what's helping on the girl side, right, we come in here and right now it's really pumping up, amping up as far as trainings and stuff, and last night it was what girls trained and the gym was absolutely full. So you're gonna see the girls still evolve so much more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just by watching how full the gym was last night.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We had 83 girls in our spring academy. It was just amazing to fill all three courts and all girls, you know, and different levels from third grade to eighth grade. No high school girls. And, you know, they got their own days. So just to see third graders having a passion for it.
I think there was a lull, though, here for a couple of years in numbers wise. I know like the current eighth grade, I think in a number of schools, not just Cedarburg, I think Homestead has a little bit of number problem. But there's a couple of years here where the numbers are lulled, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now that I'm involved more in the youth and I see the numbers, seventh grade, sixth grade, fifth grade, I got two teams at seventh grade, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the numbers you're seeing more popular on the girls' side, which is good to see.
Yeah, well, that's going to happen from that eighth grade to that freshman, sophomore year. That's the hardest transition for any guy and girl because you got to realize what you want to do and who you want to be. And sometimes that's hard to kind of see at that age. You're either going to go a different way or you're a multi-sport. You got to pick which one you want to go down. So it's always going to be a low of kind of numbers when you get to eighth, ninth grade. But you're right with that, where it's just historically low right now. It's just girls are more girls before was starting to play volleyball a mm-hmm. lot more. So I think it's starting to even the gap out a little bit more now.
Sticking with the girls side, some, like I said, summer's amping up here, right? I think I don't have a weekend off now till I looked at it, it was like August 25th or something like crazy. But you guys are really busy. You got trainings every other day, camps and stuff.
Yeah.
But sticking with the girls, so you lost a pretty good amount of girls to seniors. A lot of very good players, Sarah A.
Yep.
Caitlin, Lucy. Do a little preview of your 17 girls this year. And
oh, man, they're going to be special. So when you lose a group, you add to another group. Because the things that you lose, you want to make sure you get in the next group, because that's the culture that they're leaving behind. Obviously, offensive ability, defense, that stuff changes with different groups you have. But the DNA of my last 17U team is the same as this team. So they're going to be scrappy. They're going to be hound dogs. They're going to be competitive. They're going to be shooting the lights out. Everyone from 1 through 9 can shoot the ball. And that's going to be exciting for us, is we got a group of girls who are excited. We already got 4 or 5 girls that got D2 offers already, multiple offers. And, you know, Mackenzie Luring is our point guard. Autumn from New Berlin is our point guard as well. So we got 2 guards that are just pick you up full court, just make you uneasy. And they do it with a smile on their face. And those are the worst kind of guards, because they're not mean at all. They just going to be picking you up, getting 5 to 8 steals a game, you know, talking trash to you. So they kind of set the tone defensively and offensively. Obviously our guards, we got Sarah Hamm, we got Grace Zorbin. They were all conference players in their regards and their conferences. You know, both of them have offers, Division II offers. So that's going to be something there. We picked up a new player, Mackenzie Hawk, who's going to be our Lucy from last year. She's going to be a player that she averages like 12 points, 9 rebounds a game. And that's what we're going to kind of expect from her here too. She's a high jumper. She's very athletic, lanky, can rebound out of her area. We're going to teach her to push the ball up the court, let it ride, shoot some threes, you know, get her out of her comfort zone a little. Again, we talked about Rachel Ag. She reminds me of my wife a lot. She's 6 foot, who can shoot the ball. She can stretch the floor. She's got a 6'5", 6'6", wingspan, so she's very long and active. She doesn't realize how good she is. We're going to unlock her a lot with ghost screens and flare screens and bring the ball up the court. And she shoots over 40% from three, so we want to play towards her strengths this year. Also a high IQ player and a high GPA. So, you know, she's going to have a lot of schools that's after her. Obviously, Lauren Striflin has been with us since since the beginning. She was been with us since she was wearing high socks headbands, you know, 3rd, 4th grade. You know, those girls used to wear colorful socks.
Well, headbands were in. I can't look at a picture of my daughter from middle school. It's all headbands and
shorts. And I do like a monologue and different things with the kids as they evolve. And every year is kind of special for us. We put all these pictures together and videos. I got over 50,000 videos in my phone, because when I was young, I used to take so many videos with my phone of the training that these girls and guys used to do. So at the end of the year, I have a banquet with all these players, and I just talk about their growth from us and what we accomplished, you know, with them. And, you know, Lauren is one of those girls that started with us in 3rd, 4th grade. And now to see her with 4 or 5 offers and making all conference in different areas and shooting over 40%. I mean, that kid can go any school she wants. 4.2 GPA, high 30s on the ACT. I mean, she's going to be someone that everyone wants. And we got a first team all conference in the greater metro. And we lost Lucy, who was first team. But we got Danica, who came on. She's averaging 18 points a game this year for Germantown. When everyone thought Germantown was going to have a down year, she kind of came in, her and Lucy, and really had a great year. So she went for, she's a first-team all-conference player. So that's a huge hat off to her.
There are a lot of awards for a lot of champions.
Oh, my God, a lot
of honorable mentions, second teams.
Yeah, and that's the thing we want to highlight as seasons are starting to end, is kind of highlight all these girls that made different things. So that team is going to be special in a lot of ways because they've been together for a while, and the pieces that we added is the pieces that we lost.
What I love about it too is like on the Cedarburg side, for instance, you know, there's a lot of honorable mentions. I think there was a first team all conference in Mary, a couple second teams, but they had over a 3.8 GPA, you know.
Yes.
And to put the work in that they're putting on the court, yes, off the court, and in their schoolwork, that's more even, you know, yeah, prestigious.
Yeah, it is. So. And especially the girls, they really care about their grades because, mm-hmm, we talked about it before. They usually want to go to the school that's going to benefit them. As boys, we don't really care. Like, right, whatever school we end up in. And I remember going to Marquette and they were like, what do you want to study? I was like, whatever you think. You know, we don't care. You know, I came here for the basketball program. You know, so, you know, and the girls, they care about, hey, I want to go to school for this, and this is what I'm looking for this school. If they don't offer this, I'm not considering this school. And that's something that's just different from the guys and the girls.
Which is good.
It's good.
It's really good.
It's really good.
It helps us out.
Number, yeah, one, a ton.
Getting in places, and you have a clear goal in what you want, yeah, to do, and get you there. It helps out a ton.
Yeah, totally, totally. So that group of girls, like you mentioned, that 17 group, they're going to be fun to watch because there's a lot of girls that have been with us forever, and a couple pieces we added, they already got our DNA. So it's going to be a fun group to be a part of.
I know high school season just ended, but I mean, next year, the juniors, you know, that this year's juniors, next year's seniors are going to be, there's going to be a great competition again next year. It's going to, yeah, be...
Those Pewaukee girls, I don't see anybody beating them again. I mean, and you
are,
know,
they going back? They're back.
Yeah,
they're only juniors.
Yeah, they're back. So and then you got Arrowhead, and their best player is a sophomore. So Natalie Cuso. So that group, they just won too. So
is Nina's that Allie Zeeble kid? She's 25.
Yeah, yeah.
She's just
20. She's 24, I believe. She's going to UConn.
Yeah.
She's gone, but you still got Hortonville, with Rainey Wilson. I mean, you got some big time players who, it's just seeing the involvement of these girls. So you mentioned a player, and Rainey, they're like 6 foot point guards, like, yeah, point guard, two guards. How do you suppose to stop? Like back in our day, like 6 foot, you're stuck in a post, you know, as a girl player. These girls are bringing the ball up. They get double, triple teamed. They making step backs between the legs. The one girl you just mentioned.
I think it's Allie Zeeble.
Yeah, Zeeble. She was doing side steps off of one leg, you know, side step, one leg fade like Dirk. And she was doing it multiple times in the game. So I know that was her skill set. So she dropped 35 in the state game. They didn't end up winning, beating Arrowhead, but no one can stop her. And the game was slow to her. Like, she was just picking her spots. She was like, man, she's 6 foot doing this. So it's just fun to watch the involvement of the girls game. And it's going to be just as spectacular next year because a lot of those girls are coming back.
Awesome. Well, we sat here for an hour talking about the girls game. Yeah, we could probably go on and on with them. They're, like I said, I like coaching them more than the boys.
Yes,
I
mean, yes.
It's just my opinion. But
I love it. Love the girls game, the involvement of it, the excitement around it. The girls are excited to be in a gym, seeing their teammates. So just starting back up AAU season, just to seeing the smiles on these girls' faces and how hard they're working and hard they're playing, it makes for a special time over the summer for us. So we're looking forward to continue to watch the girls game as far as college and WNBA, but we're excited that AAU is here too.
Awesome. I know, pay attention next week. We got a pretty good guest coming on. I won't mention who it is. We'll, yep, we'll drop that next time. We've had some pretty good ones here for doing this now. Yeah. I think this is our 12th.
Yeah, so now you guys have to listen to us for an hour.
Right. Yeah. What you, yeah, get for that. Yeah. You know, Travis, Craig, you know, yeah, Steve, we, yeah, you know, referee Keith.
Yeah.
He did that Germantown Arrowhead game. I saw him.
He did. He's been everywhere, and every time I see him, I was like, yep. You keep moving up. You know, we talked about different tiers. He keeps moving up. He's doing sectional games now, and he's doing big-time games.
He's got to make his choice. This, when I talked to him on Thursday, he's got to, I guess they have to pick if you want to go girls for college and men's. You got to make that decision. You can't like go both. So he said he's got to make that decision coming up here soon.
So out of all our guests, who do you think the most popular podcast was?
Oh, it's Frank's. That's a true question.
Yeah, Tim Franks is.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
And it's still getting clicks, you know. Yeah.
Like, it's probably him listening to it.
Yeah.
He's through watching more clicks.
No, but in all honesty, though, that's what the kids are dealing with. It, you know, what he has dealt with. There's so many people afraid to talk about it. Remember, we talked about this. There's a taboo of talking about, you know, mental health. And he having Mr. Basketball State finalists talk about it, you know, they can talk to their fourth grader or fifth grader like, hey, listen to what he just said.
Yeah.
You know, how do you feel right now? Like, he opened a door for having parent conversations with their kids. And that's why that one's going to always be the most popular one.
All right, everybody. Thanks a lot. Hope you enjoyed it. Have a good day.